Today's daf in Masechet Nazir, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Nun. And we are already a little bit ahead because we had already analyzed the opening statement of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that in the list of things that a Nazir is mitameh, a maid and a kizayit min hamet, which was a little bit strange. What's the point of mentioning the maid? If kizayit min hamet is mitameh? And this was Rabbi Yehuda's problem with Sumchus, Talmud of Rabbi Meir, and he objected to Rabbi Meir's gears. Rabbi Yossi explained that it's possible to have a mate that does not have a kezayit min hamate, and not only that, but does not even have an aver min hamate. How is that possible? He's talking about a Nefel shalonit kashru evarav begidin. So meaning that it's such a premature aborted fetus that not only does it not have a kezayis min hamet, but it doesn't even have any clearly defined gidim, because it's that early in fetal development, and therefore its evorim don't have a din of evorim, because evorim that don't have gidim v'atzonos are not considered to be evorim, as we'll see. Boser gidim v'atzomex. That was the approach of Rabbi Yossi. Rava gave a different approach. Rava said that the reason that it mentions the mate besides the kezayit min hamet is to tell you that the things that are not listed in the Mishnah that would be metamet, which would be inyonim of rov, so rov minyano, in which we would say ruba kekulai. So in such a case where we had a rov, where we nonetheless do not have the shear of chatzi atzamot, and the Gabi the Nazir, rov atzamot in terms of general tuma, because remember there were two things that were unique about the Nazir's din of stira as opposed to the normal din of tumas meis by direct exposure to meis, besides all the other things that are not considered to be direct exposure to meis. But there's two departures from the norm. And that is that instead of a rova hakavat samot, the din is that you need a chatzi kavat samot, and instead of a revias dam, you need a chatzi lugdam in order for the nazir to have to be megaleach and to be soter. So that's what we finished yesterday, and that included the first two cases, al hamet v'al kezayit min hamet. Now, let's continue on, because the Mishnah continues about kezayit netzel. So, al hamet, al kezayit min hamet, val kezayit netzel. What exactly is netzel? So, netzel is besar hamet shekarash, umohel shehirtiach. So, this is reference to the actual protoplasm, or the actual boser of the mate, that it's turned into something like a gel, because it's in the process of decaying. Or if you have any kind of fluid that was coming around the mate, which we're not really sure what it is, but it actually would boil by bubbling when it was put on a fire. And therefore, we know that it really is an actual decaying substance. There's lots of things that might be liquids that come out of a corpse that are not really basar, obviously. So if that's the case, it would not be metamet, because only kezayit min hamet or kezayit netzel is metamet. So the way that we would know would be to check it out through hartacha. So hechidami, explain to me why we need to know that we have the karash, and we're trying to check it out. I mean, ilei medelo yadina didehu. So if we have no idea that what we're looking at is actual decomposed basar hamet, I mean, what's the difference if it gelled? I mean, why in the world would we consider it to be min hamet that a nazir would be megaleach? Remember, a nazir cannot be megaleach without being over on an iser, unless he really has to be megaleach. So we're not going to do this if we are unsure of what this substance is. It's really just lovely here having just me and you, Daniil. That way you could be sure it's la'aliyas nefesh. This is not another face that's visible. And it's great to be learning with all of these letters. I'm telling you, the generation of AI is absolutely perfect I mean, Gavi's AI is even nicer than Gavi, of course, would prefer it any day, right? What's going on around here? At least the AIs don't have to blow their nose, but we'd much rather have a Gavi with a nose than an AI without one, let me tell you. Yes, indeed. Finally getting a Moshe at the end of the Lord of the Rings over here. Look at this. Man, oh man. Of course, the Gabbai is here, so the Rebbe is not going to show his face. Why should he if we already have a Gabbai? Yeah, Mordechai figures with a beard like that, everybody will run, so he doesn't want to show his face. The big N figures, oh my gosh, that nothing could make the same impression that that N makes, so what the heck, I should, look at that. A smiling big N. That's fantastic. You know, David Solomon thinks that, that the statue is nicer than he is, so I guess he doesn't want to give us any pleasure. Ay, 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 ay. This is tough. Oh, now we're talking. Okay. Very good. Baruch Avram, I understand. He just doesn't want to be caught sleeping. I mean, it's very good. Okay, so now the question is, if we don't know that what we're looking at is Netzel, I mean, this might be somebody's jello dessert and not a mate. So what in the world are we talking about to have a Nazir be Megaleach on jello? Obviously, there are things that are not quite as nice as jello, but they could be all types of mucus or other bodily fluids that are here, but they're not actually decomposing basar. So, Ela Diadina Dideyu. So, if we know that what we have over here is definitely the leftover of decaying basar, so then why does it have to be Karash Badafka? What is the simon of Krisha that makes it tummy? Rabbi Yirmiyahu, look. If we don't know what something is, okay, Bistam, so then if it was actually Karash, if it literally gelled, so then we're assuming that it would be a Mohel. In this case, we're using Mohel differently than we used it originally. We're using Mohel as an actual decomposing Basar. But if it wasn't even Karash, then we're going to assume that we can't be Megaleach. I mean, it could be saliva. It could be other bodily fluids. It could be mucus. Who knows? How about when it comes to the din of Tumas Nevela? Is this halacha of Netzel? Is it specific to human remains? Or is it even on a behemah? In which case, the Nevela would also be metame by Netzel. Do we say that in terms of the Kabbalah, of the Halakha L'Moshe Sinai, in the list of those Dvarim that are considered to be the equivalent of a mace? So we only have the din of Netzel from humans. The Torah was never marbe in the Torah Shebal Peh that there should be such a thing as Netzel of an Avela. Or maybe the Kabbalah was that decomposition is still considered to be the presence of the basar. Now, this is not a very well-defined question because we know, we've already discussed so many times, that when it comes to the halacha of Tumas Nevela, we have a big machlokas because since the Torah said, Lo tochal kol nevela, and instead you're supposed to give it to the gercha shebisharecha, that tells me that it has to be ra'ui for the ger. And if it isn't, it's not an avela. In other words, once the Torah puts those two things together, then once it's decayed to the point that a person is not going to eat it, it's not considered to be an avela. Now, the question is, if you recall, that was a machlokas, because we have two inyanim that we learn out from the inyanim of nevela. One is tuma chamura. The basar of an avela is metame other things, and it's an avatuma. However, there's the other issue, that it is also called ochlim, and therefore it's mekabel tuma. Now the question is, of course there's cases where something can be mekabel tuma, but it doesn't emit tuma. So we could have, in the case, let's say, of nivlat ha'of. Over there, if we have nivlat of tahor, it's only going to be metame when you're swallowing it. The question is, if it touched tuma, is it mekabel tuma or not, assuming that it was miyuchad l'achila? Fine, so this is a machlokas. Does the Torah tell us that tum'a chamura is ad l'ger, the tum'a kala ad lekelev. So then we know the moment that the Torah said the ger asher b'sharecha, we understood that it is not considered to be a nevela, the moment that it isn't something that you could give to a human being to consume. So then, there's no question. I mean, obviously, shapir. I mean, a netzel is completely and totally not roy for a human being to eat, and therefore, it's not going to be metame, not because of the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. It's not going to be metame because it's defined in the pasuk as not being a nevela. So our only question, just to refine this, okay, the only question would be talking about, according to the Mandi Omar, who holds that even Tuma Chamura is actually Ad Lekelev, and that it's still going to be Metame unless it isn't Roy even for a dog to eat, in which case you can conceive of cases where it may be Netzel and still be Roy Lachilas Kelev. And that's the question. Would it be considered to be still a nevela based on the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai of the concept of netzel? Or is that specifically a human issue? I really wanted to encourage Mordechai to come this morning and to expose Santa Claus. After all, some kind of things are encouraging, even for Santa Claus. Come on, take a look, Mordechai. Come on. Come join the partridge in the pear tree. Look at this. A lot of resistance. There we go. All right. So Tashma, let's take a look and see what the halacha is. If you have an oaf tahor, remember an oaf tahor is only going to be metame tuma chamura, be metame a human being even, it's only mekabel tuma from an avat tuma, as it is swallowed, has to be eaten. Now, suppose you took a dead chicken and you made, I forgot what they call it, you know, the melted Schumann basement. Come on. Schmaltz. Schmaltz. So you made schmaltz from an Avela chicken. So you went into Safeway, bought a chicken, and made schmaltz. So what's the din if it's been melted over a fire? Himchu ba'ur. It's still considered to be tameh. But if you put your Safeway chicken into the sun until it melts, then it's tahor. Now, if you're going to tell me that the halacha is that a nevela is mitameh ad lekelev, and that there's a din of netzel, so then this is afilu b'chama, because it is now netzel. It's melted chicken, essentially. And that should be mitame. And over here it says it's not mitame, beferish. So that's your answer. No, that's not an answer. Because at what point was it did it actually melt if you left it in the sun? I can tell you one thing. Long after it stunk to high hell and it was impossible to eat it. But once it's asrach, avilei afar. Then it doesn't have a din of food at all because it's not roy even for a kelev. This doesn't prove anything. Okay, let's move on to a different issue. And that is, once we've been talking about liquids, essentially, thick liquids, gelled liquids, we have to talk about the way in which you can pass tumah from one item to another through a liquid. Now, there's a concept called nitzuk. Nitzuk is where you're pouring one pourable item into another, and you have the actual liquid that is between the upper kli and the lower kli. So it's pouring down. Is that nitzuk considered to be tameh itself? And if it is it metameh the upper container that it's coming from? Or is only the liquid that's actually within the container, which is the way that we define when it comes to liquid, being part of another liquid, since it takes on the shape of the container, what would be the din of the nitzuk? So Tanan, when it comes to the din of nitzuk in the Mishnah and Machshirin, we learn like this, the kol ha-nitzuk tohor. Anytime that you're pouring something that is liquid into another liquid container, and that lower liquid container is tameh, the halacha is that the Nitzok itself is Tahar, and it does not provide a Chibur to the material above it. We have the same issue, by the way. Of course, it's not exactly the same Dina, but we have the same issue of Nitzok when it comes to Kashrus. So you're pouring something into something that turns out to be treif, or you're pouring milk into meat. Is the Nitzok a Chibur to connect the entire milk bottle that you're pouring from into the meat that you're pouring into? That type of thing is also a question. It's a chibur with its own set of halachas, binogea kashras, and binogea, obviously, the difference between basar b'cholav and the difference of, which is not also until it's mixed, and other things that are tame in the sense of treif. But getting here to the din literally of tumah v'tayra, so here the Mishnah says it's considered not to be a connection unless it is dvash hazipim and tzapichit. Now, that idea, the tzapichit, that is a very thick nitzuk because it has flour in it. So they would mix the honey and flour. And then if you're pouring it into the frying pan, you know, to make these little teglach, whatever. So that is considered to be different than a normal nitzuk. And those things, because they're very thick, let's assume. So because of that, it's considered to be connecting the two, the place where it's being poured from and the thing that you're pouring into. Now, what zifim is very interesting, because the notion of zifim, according to Waman Diomar, is ziyuf. And that means to be able to water it down. So in other words, it is so thick that people would actually, in normal times, sell what passes for honey in these times, which is like 60% garbage that they throw in there and pretend it's pure honey. By the way, that's very important when you're buying honey. It's almost impossible to get pure honey, even when they claim it is. If you do a lab analysis, it's very impure honey, which has a lot to do with the kashrus of the honey too, of course. Okay, so except for those things, we consider a nitzuk not to be a connection. Beit Shammai says, well, af hamikpah shel grisin v'shel pul, if you have a very thick stew or an oatmeal, which is thick, and it's got these kind of things in it that are very thick, so that too, mipnei shehi soledet l'achoreha, because what happens is when you stop pouring, at the moment that you stop and you put your cup up, it doesn't actually continue to fall. What happens is that the part that's closest to the cup goes back into the cup because it's so thick, or it falls on the edge of the cup, but it doesn't pour. So because of that, it's not considered to be a chibur. It's considered to be a chibur because of the way that it is so incredibly thick. So that is the same, a mikvah, says Beit Shammai, is the same as the tzapichit. Boy Rami Bar Choma, would there be a concept of nitzuk on melted ochlin? So if you're talking about schmaltz, that we were talking about, is the nitzuk over there considered to be a chibur? O a nitzuk lo ochlin? Mi amrina mishum de it pehu rire? Is the reason that the Tanakhama said that the tzapiches, or the zifim type of honey, is considered to be a chibur, is because these things are something that actually have ririm. So ririm, usually we use riri for meaning mucus-like structures, but what it means is they have thick elasticity that allows them to be pulled back in and into the cup. So the honey is all as if it's connected because of the rir in it. Masha Einkein, obviously, melted fats, which are oil, don't have rearing. The whole point of oil is that it's not going to spring back because of the difference. The real difference is in what we term surface tension. It's molecular attraction. The whole point of an oil is that we use it as an oil because it has a very, very low kind of surface tension. That's the point. You want to kill your mosquitoes. You want to make sure that the oxygen is not going to get into the water, so you let the oil, little tiny drop of oil, spreads over the top of the water. So therefore, they don't have riri. Or maybe the reason that we consider the tzapichit to be a chibur is not because of the molecular attraction. It's simply because of how thick it is. And there's a point in which it's thick enough to be looked at as a solid piece. So it more resembles a solid than a liquid, and because of that, it's as if it's all connected. Now, that would be very different, because you could certainly have very thick schmaltz, even though it's not going to have what we term the pullback effect, the Riri effect. Well, my Rava, I think I can show you a proof. It says, Chelev ha-meit shehu shalem v'hiticho tamei. Suppose you had a kezayit of chelev, of a mate, which has the same din as a kezayit of basar, and it was melted, it's still tamei. But that's only if it started out as a kezayit, which was tamei. Now, suppose there were little pieces that were not a kezayit, and none of them had a kezayit in them, hayam beforad, and then it was melted together, then it's tahor, because artificial chiburim, called chibur al yedei adam instead of al yedei teva, is not considered to be a chibur legabe the dinim of tumas meis. Now, if you hold that there's no such thing as nitzuk lo ochlim, then there's no possibility of starting with even a full kezayit and then beginning the melting process, because since some of it is certainly going to run off to the side of whatever it is that you started melting, and at that point it's no longer mechubur, unless you hold that nitzuk is a chibur. And if nitzuk is a chibur, then you can start with the kezayit, and then when you have the full amount that is melted, then it would be considered to be tameh. But if you hold a nitzuk la'ochlin at all, so then even if it started off as shalem v'yiticho, it should be considered to be tahor. Omer Bizera, not necessarily, because there are ways in which you wouldn't necessarily have to come on to nitzuk. I was there with Marbury de Ravina, and we figured out that we could have a case, if Hochma Mayas Kinan, could go into Bahadi de Martechle, Solak Amuda de Nur Lepumini de Mona. What you sometimes have in inflammable substances is that you may start heating them, and then all of a sudden the whole thing goes up in a puff of a spontaneous combustion, which like looks like there's an entire column of fire that popped up to the top of the container and then cooled. Obviously, it gave off so much energy, and then it was korash once it cooled, in which case it was all there the whole time. This is a technical issue, whether it's possible to have a situation in which you wouldn't have to come out to nitzuk. This is not a raya. Amalei Ravina L'Ravashiwa, I have a raya. Tashma. Beit Shammai Omrim. Ein ha-mikpah shel grisin v'shel po. Af ha-mikpah shel grisin v'shel po. Mipnei shem soldim l'achoreyem. Take a look at the way that Beit Shammai defined his halacha. He didn't say that the reason, Mordechai, you got to make up your mind. I mean, either it's the drums or the beard. But so if Beit Shammai says, my reason is that they have this pullback effect of slida. How do we say slida in English? Like, if something is yad soledet bo, that you pull back your hand from it because it's too hot. Or is there a word for jumping back? Anyone have a word for that, for slida in English?
Knee-jerk reaction?
What? Knee-jerk. Knee-jerk reaction could be to kick you in the head. I mean, but we're talking about... What?
Flinch.
Pledge? I never... What is that?
Flinch.
No, but this is not... No. It's the pulling back as a reaction. It's not just the flinching.
It's withdrawing, but it's jerking backwards.
Right, but what would be the word? Jerk? That's the closest word you can get. It's a pretty jerky word. Okay, but maybe.
Which one?
Huh?
Retract.
I'm not hearing retract.
Retract.
No, this is, we're talking about the jerk is closer because it means like a sudden pullback. Okay, but anyway, so Beit Shammai says, now that we've discussed it, I guess everybody gets the idea what slida is. So since it says over here, soldim la'achorehem, so it jumps back, that is apparently the understanding. And it's not because of the thickness, because otherwise, why did he discuss the question of Slida if he could have just said, it's also very thick? Oh, no, no, come on. I mean, there may be different things. I mean, we're talking about the Tanakama. Tanakama was talking about the tzapichit and the type of honey that is zifim. Okay, the shita over there, I mean, I don't know, maybe according to the Tanakama, it has to do with how thick it is. It was Beit Shammai who says, well, he was the one who says, af hamikpa, right? And he's justifying it because of the facts of sold in Lachrim. So maybe ain't okinami. Maybe according to Beit Shammai, maybe there's an additional consideration. It doesn't mean that the topic under consideration all along was the question not of thickness, but of slida. So you can't prove from Beit Shammai that that was the issue in the original case. Okay, let's move on now to the next strange shiur that we had, which was a melotarvad. Listen, I must tell you that in the yeshivas, the word rakav, which is the Hebrew pronunciation, is always pronounced rekev, even though it's rekav or rekav hamet, since that was the smichus originally. So I'm just going to use rekev because that's the way that I've been talking forever. So I'm not.
Let me have a revius first.
Oh, I was busy showing it off to Mordechai. I didn't want to just drink it. L'chaim, l'chaim. I have a Gavi Revius here and a Akiva Revius. There we go. So the shear that the Mishnah gave was a Melo Tarvad, and that was the Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai. But what exactly is a Melo Tarvad? I mean, a Tarvad of what? Tarvad is like a big ladle, but I have no idea what that shear is. So kama shiuro. So what exactly is the shear of a tarvad? Now, you might say we had the Mishnah, remember, when we learned all of the shiurim in Kalim, one of our favorite mesechtas, right? So over there, it said tarvad harofim. The question is, apparently, we don't know what that is. Or at least at this point in the Gemara, they didn't know what it was. Maybe at the time of the Mishnah in Kalim, it was clear. But it's no longer clear. So what is the shear? So Chizkiah says, the shear is melo pisat hayad. So that means a palmful. Now, a palmful generally means up to the fingers. So in other words, you cup your hand, and what you can hold in your cupped hand up till the fingers is considered to be the shear of the pisat hayad. Rabbi Yochanan says, it's melo chofnav, which most of the Rishonim understand is not just that it's the entire handful, which some taina, but as the Rambam makes it clear that we're talking about chofnav, which are both hands put together. That's the shear of the ketoret. And that's much larger. It's not only larger because it's two, it's larger because it includes the area of the fingers. Now, the problem is that we have a braita that says, Tznan, or Tanya, Mlo tarvad rekev, shamru, yeshnan mi ikar etzpaot ulamala. So, from the very base of the fingers, so that would be at the edge of the pisat hayad, all the way up to the top of your fingers. So says Rabbi Meir. Now, this is a completely different shear. Sounds like it anyway. V'chachomim omri melo chofnav. So now, Rabbi Yochanan obviously was going aliba the chachomim. So he was the Amar Kerabona. But Chizkiah apparently doesn't have a single tana to be semichan. Not like Rabbi Meir who says that it's the shear of what your fingers can hold. And not like the Rabbanan who say that it's much more and that it's melo chofnav. Not necessarily Amri. You could taina that melok pisat hayad and melok yishrei etzbotav lamala may actually be exactly the same shear. And maybe that's the whole point that Chizkiah was trying to make. In other words, even though it doesn't seem that there ought to be any connection, but apparently biologically, so the construct called a palm and its relationship in terms of the formation of the fingers relative to that palm always ends up with the palm having the same capacity as the fingers when they're clumped together and they're holding something only in the fingers. Maybe that was the whole point. I don't know. I mean, I never did the experiment, but maybe. So it could be. Chad Shiuruhu. But Rav Shimi Barada points out to Rav Papa that this whole thing has been made on really jumping to conclusions. Why jumping to conclusions? Because when you say from Kishrei Etzbeotav and up, what is up? That's the question. Are you holding your hands up in front of your face, or are your hands at your side pointing downwards? What's called up? So if that's the question, then how do you know that it doesn't mean exactly the opposite? Means l'rosh, to the top of the fingers. Maybe it means in the opposite direction. Maybe it means from the Kishrei Etzbeotav up to your wrist, which is a palmful. This is another way of making it clear what we're talking about by Pisata Yad, in which case is exactly what Chizkiya was saying. So Dilma Lamata Midiyade. Avile Melo Pisata Yad. Teku. Tana Rabbana. So as we mentioned when we were learning the Mishnah, to define what we mean by rekev, it's not just a physical description. A mech yesh lo rekev is a specific halacha l'mesh mi-Sinai of what would be metameh. It would be rare to actually have a din of melo tarvad rekev. Why? Because the din of rekev was given over to be only 100% dust of a mate, which means that if a mate was buried, as is usual with tachrichin, or if a mate was buried in the ground, or if a mate was buried in a wooden coffin, whatever the case would be, there would be no rekev. Because over there, the decayed material of the tachrichin would have mixed with the rekev of the mate, or some of the wood, which gradually decays, would fall in, would also have been included in the rekev, or the dust that was on the ground. So the only way that you could possibly have a situation of rekev hamate is where you had, let's say, a marble coffin kind of thing, which the mate is completely isolated, and there were no tachrichim. So then whatever is left is rekev. So the mate would have to be nikbar aron, aron shel shayish, or agabi ritzpah shel avanim, but you can't have anything that would be like brick or anything like that, because that also could lose some little tiny pieces that would then get mixed up in the rekev. Ze mechiyesh lo rekev. But if nikbar b'ksuto, if there were tachrichin on this mate, or if it was in an aron shel eight, or even agabe ritzpah shelevenim, zeu meit she'ein lo rekev, because it would have had a mixture of anything else. And that was the halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. And another din is, Amar Ula, ein rekev el ahaba min ha-basar u'min ha-gidin u'min ha-atzamot. The rekev has to include basar, gidin, v'atzamot, which would mean that when we were talking about the case of an embryo, well, we did not have actually any kind of gidim yet, because it was prior to the formation of gidim, and then there would be no din of rekev. Eitve Rava lo Ula, doesn't it say beferish in the Braita that rekev abamin abasar is tahar? And it only mentions abamin abasar, which is mashma, that if it would be ba min ha etzem, even though there were no other things, no gidim, there was no basar, that etzem alone creates the rekev. Because, I mean, obviously, if what was the halacha is based on is that you need to have what Ula claims, that you need to have basar, gidim, v'atzamos, so why in the world would we have specified specifically this case, that it's coming only from basar? The truth would be, no matter what it would be coming only from atzamot, to be coming only from gidin, it also wouldn't be considered to be rekev. So you see from here that if it would be mina etzem alone, it would be tamei afa gavda leka basar. No, you have to understand the braita differently. Ema hochi. Rekev Abamina Basar Tahor Ach Yesh Etzem Bibasar. What it's trying to say is that if there was no Reseg, if it's only Basar, but didn't have Atzomas in it, it needs to have Atzomas. It doesn't imply that the Etzem itself would be Metame. Yeah, okay, that's all very nice, but what about Gidim? I mean, the Ula said that you need everything. There's no such thing, says the Gemara. You cannot find Basar and Atzamot that do not have any kind of Gidim. So it's not necessary to even say it. So again, because we were talking about the complete mate, and that means that the only case that he was saying that would not have would be the case of the Uber Shalonis Kashuivorov Begidim. So by definition, he wouldn't have Gidim. So that's, if that's what we're talking about, we don't have to add to it.